2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is Dylan White, the master of the Robo Scout. He's got his Blue Jays hat on. He's feeling good after the trade deadline with all the moves that the Jays made to reinforce their system and potentially their future. Dylan, how's it going, man? How are the teams doing? How's the NFBC chase this year? Doesn't sound like you're going to win, but are you in the mix at least in your league?
One of the DCs is second. I think we're just going to finish second. I don't think we're going to win, but we're like 88th overall or something like that. That's the Acuna team as well. So not bad considering. The Super, which is basically a main but without an overall component, so it's just the 15 teams play to win. We're in seventh, but like projected to do okay. And that's pretty much it. The other main, not gonna money. The other DC, not gonna money. We haven't had a first baseman the whole year, basically, because we have Cassis, Jose Abreu, Ryan Noda, and Joey Gallo. So we've literally played without a first baseman for like the last 3 months. But yeah, not bad. I think Whit Merrifield is the guy I picked up in three leagues. So we're hoping that Whit Merrifield, who is taking over Ozzie Albies, obviously, seems to be playing every day, batting ninth. We need stolen bases, so we got a lot of Whit Merrifield on our team. So that's our big pickup of the weekend. You know, I like Whit Merrifield.
I only have a DC right now. I do have a Razzlam team that's in the wild card. That's in 11th, but I don't think I'm going to make the cut in order to advance to the next round. But it's been okay. My DC all year has been teeter-tottering between 4th and 6th. I just like can't get over that hump. We do have Jackson Holliday back, though, which nice. Helps. Urseg got traded to a place where he's actually going to close. That helps. And we're going to get Tristan Cassis back, I think, in the next couple of days to a week. So that helps. So, you know, I feel like on paper, the team still has a chance. I'm hoping to maybe push for third at this point so I can get my money back again. Drafted this with a good friend, Dan Fu out there. You know, he's listening. But, you know, we got to get in third so he can't give me any crap over the picks that I forced us to make, like Nico Horner, that have not produced. But, hey, you know, batting average steals. I thought I was going to get some. Hasn't been as good as I thought it was going to be. It's kind of the story of 2024. I feel like there's been so many catastrophic injuries that it's just like, this has been a year where it's been less about like executing in the draft and like on the waiver wire and just like dodging major landmines. Like you said, with Acuna, like that's something that like you can't make up that production. You know, there's nobody coming up in the minors that's going to come up and give you, you know, 30-30 type of production, even for like a 3 month stretch at the end of the year. It's just, it's not going to happen. That being said, we had the trade deadline. It's a little bit past at this point. We've had a bunch of discussions about it. We've re-ranked our top 30, so you can go and check those out on the site. We ranked every prospect that was traded at the deadline. JJ and the team did a great job of that. JJ kind of leading the charge on that and then asking us for opinions here and there. It was interesting. I feel like there were a lot of interesting prospects move, guys who could be potential top 100 prospects in a year from now. Not a lot of like right now impact prospects. And I would say even in terms of like MLB players, it was kind of like that B level tier of players that got moved, right? It wasn't the Crochet. It wasn't the Scooble. None of those sort of big deals came to fruition or materialized, but we did get, you know, some interesting players moved. Like Kikuchi certainly looked like we were wrong about that being a ripoff trade. I think we'll still in years show that that was the case, but he looked great with Houston in his first start. He shows flashes like this. He's got great stuff when he's on. He can be electric. It's just a matter of him finding some consistency. And maybe there in Houston, he can find that. We'll see. Jack Flaherty is interesting. There were a lot of rumors out there that there were other teams involved. And the Yankees were one where there was potentially a deal in place. But the medicals kind of crashed the deal. So I don't know if that gives you pause with Flaherty in the second half of the season. I don't have him that many places, like onesie, twosie kind of area. That's one where I'm just like I can see it working out really well, or I can see it being a trade acquisition that looks good on paper and then it just doesn't materialize and he starts to break down over the course of the season. So will be interesting to see what happens there. Any other deals that you want to discuss before we sort of move on here?
No, I think that's fine. Yeah, with Flaherty, I think if you have Flaherty, you're kind of worried that the other shoe's going to drop anyway. Like, he's kind of an injury risk. So I guess seeing it in print maybe kind of reinforces it and scares you. Yeah. And you're just kind of hoping, you know, he's on the Dodgers, so that's as good as you can get, basically. And you just ride it for as long as you can. So, I mean, I think what I'm trying to say is if you have Flaherty, I think you got to be ecstatic that he got traded to the Dodgers, even though there are these rumors about the medicals.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any, like, huge news that's taken place over the last week. Just in terms of, you know, major injuries. There's guys dealing with stuff. Mason Miller's facing hitters. I know Gabby Marrero is dealing with a groin strain. Freddie Freeman's had some personal stuff. I know Ranger Suarez is working his way back. Brooks Lee's got shoulder soreness. Jacob Wilson taking batting practice. It's mostly good news of, like, guys coming back. So I don't think anything we got to dig in too heavy with here. Let's get into it. So we both participated in the P1 ADP mock drafts that our good friend Chris Welsh of CBS, and he's done some work with The Athletic, of course, in this league he's been with forever. That's, you know, his baby. Does a lot of great prospect work, I think, as one of the better produced podcasts out there. Fantasy baseball or otherwise, he just does a great job. It's always an exciting show. He gets great guests. We've both been guests on that show previously. So yeah, I thought it was, it's always a good exercise, always a lot of fun. And I think this is the time of year where, like, we can kind of plant our flags a little bit on guys that, we've been hot on and maybe see how, we rate them versus, you know, the rest of the industry and, you know, avid fantasy baseball players. Cause I think that's the good thing, is there's a mix of experts, but also folks that really care and love these opportunities that are great players that maybe don't produce content. And, you know, I think sometimes, how much guys like that can move the needle within given leagues, because they play in a lot of leagues and they're competitive, is kind of underrated, frankly. So it's always interesting to see how that plays out. We're not going to talk about our boards here. I don't want to go into other people's picks. We don't have to do one of those shows. Chris is going to have tons of information because he's got all the ADP data. He's going to do some shows off of it, I'm sure. I'm going to talk a little bit about our teams, because I liked what I drafted. I'm pretty sure you liked what you drafted. I had a very specific strategy with my team. And that was, I wanted to go as many high upside hitters as I possibly could for as long as I could. This wasn't a conscious decision going into it. I started to see how the market's moving heavily toward hoarding pitching prospects. It's something we've talked about. I think it's good practice in a dynasty league, depending upon how your league is set up. That said, in real life, in fantasy, I think we still see that amassing high-end hitting prospects is what moves the needle and allows you to use those players later as trade assets to acquire said pitching prospects or pitchers or major leaguers, whatever you want to say, the guys that you need to reinforce your staff. Because, you know, at the same time, I think high-end hitting is exciting. I liked what I did. I don't know if you want to go off my pick, your pick. I picked from the 3-hole. You picked from the 10-hole, so it's kind of good. We're both, like, a couple picks removed from the top and the back of the draft. So we can kind of see how we're navigating it each. We both went with Baltimore Orioles hitters in the first round. I took Jackson Holliday at 3. You know, I thought about some other options there. I thought about going big and going Travis Bazzana. I'm going to subscribe to the KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid. I just went with Jackson Holliday. And I think, like, over the last week or so, since he's been back up with the big club, kind of buried the leagues, kind of an interesting story, he's really been hitting. He's looked good. He's looked like Jackson Holliday. He's looked what we thought he was going to be. That's exciting. You went with Kobe Mayo, another guy who's actually in the big leagues now alongside Jackson Holliday. I don't know. You know, the results haven't, it's been a handful of games, but the results haven't been crazy yet. I think we'll get there. I think the power is going to get there. The approach is going to get there. As we can see with Jackson Holliday, even if the early struggles are there, these guys can tread water and then sort of figure things out at the major league level. They're talented. They know how to make adjustments. What other options are on the board there for you with Mayo? I know that Basayo, Xavier Isaac went the pick after, Max Clark, Emmanuel Rodriguez. And somehow, and this was actually one of the more surprising developments to me, Charlie Condon lasted until your second round pick. So you went with him in the second. So talk me through that a little bit. Was it an easy choice with Mayo? Or were there some other options there that you were considering?
It was an easy choice for me. I have Mayo like fifth or sixth. I think I'd say the consensus top three-ish are probably James Wood, Jackson Holiday, Junior Caminero in some mix. And then I have like Kobe Mayo around there, Emmanuel Rodriguez maybe around there, Jason Dominguez. So I didn't know who I'd get at 10. I just didn't want to think about it until it got to me. And then I saw that Mayo was available. So I was very surprised. So that was an easy one. And then after like the guys on, I was picking 10th, like you said, so 11, 12, those guys picked really fast every time. So it came back to me very quickly throughout the whole draft. So cheers to those guys. Willis Cubs and C Young 27. Really appreciate it. So yeah, Condon was also a no doubter for me. I have Condon kind of 10-ish overall. And then the fact that he was available at 15, and then I'm not going to pick again till, I don't know, something like 30. Yeah, I was just going to snatch it right away. So I really like the Mayo Condon. I had my strategy, like there's no positions or anything. I'm not trying to fill out an infield or an outfield. It's still embedded in me to not take pitchers as high as I normally would. It's also more fun to take hitters. It's also way more fun to not take sort of like injured prospects or like old in the tooth prospects. Just it's more exciting to take sort of like the new shiny tool or shiny toy. So we'll get to that later. But Mel Condon was no brainers for me for both picks. And then I had to start thinking.
Yeah. And so I went back to at, was it 22? I got DeVries there and I was a little surprised he lasted that long. I think he went 21 in your draft. And then, you know, back at the turn in the third round, I got Colt Emerson, who actually went like 17th overall in your draft. So he went way higher. I was shocked in the value there. I was shocked that Emerson dropped that much just simply because he's always hit. Obviously had injury earlier in the season, but no questions there. And I think like now that he's moving over to Everett, he's going to play with their short porches. The numbers could get pretty loud toward the end of the season. And I think like he's young enough that I don't really care if he misses half a season in A-ball, just because we know what the abilities are. Your third round pick, you went with Carson Williams. Kind of, he's been great for three quarters of the year so far, has tailed off a little bit lately. But I think when you think close to the majors, there's power there. If you're playing in an OBP league, the OBP is there. The contact's gotten better. And he's such a good defender that he's going to be in the infield every single day once he's up. So, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense as well. What are your thoughts in terms of like DeVries dropping that low? Because I think we talked about it last week. I think from like a pure upside fantasy play standpoint, this guy is top 10 for me. And like, I'm not that concerned about the numbers leading up until like mid-June. He's way young. I think people need to remember this guy wouldn't be draft eligible as an American until next year. And he's an A-ball. This is a guy that typically in, you know, back in 2019, before the minor league structure had gotten shrunk, probably would have done short season ball, you know, and then maybe seen A-ball at the end of the year. We're excited about guys that hit in the complex that are older than him that then go to A-ball and maybe struggle a little bit. So for me, that was a no-brainer pick. I'm more than happy to take the upside there. And I think a year from now, like that will definitely be validated. And I just think in terms of the underlying data that we talked about last week, like he's just so exciting. So I was happy to get him there, but it looks like that's probably going to be around where the mock is. I think the value hasn't caught up to what the capabilities are there personally. So.
Yeah. I mean, like we talked last week, I had him as a buy low or a target, and part of the rationale was that I didn't think the industry had kind of caught up yet. I think on some of the public lists, he's still, you know, like 30 to 50 because he started off so slow and no one has kind of like hadn't really made the adjustments to bring him up. Like guys like Felton Celestin, I mentioned last week too, is like he was kind of flashier at the beginning, and so he's kind of ahead of DeVries on most of these lists. And so I was kind of hoping he'd fall back to me in the third, especially since like the Mayo Condon thing, which I did not expect. I'm like, okay, so people are going off of different lists, and there's a shot now that I can get DeVries in the third. And then of course he went in the second at before even you grabbed him. So that kind of ended that that dream. But yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I was thinking of taking DeVries if Condon was gone in that pick, in my second pick there, which would have been 15, I think. And I expected that might make waves, but apparently it hasn't. I don't know if you heard Welsh did a kind of a preview of the P180Ps on his last podcast. And he went fifth. DeVries went fifth in one league, and they were him and Tim Kanak were shocked at that he went fifth. So
I think there's a point where like this board to me in comparison to other years is wide open. Mm-hmm. Like
I agree.
And I was going to make this point and I will actually after the commercial break, but yeah, I think that there is a cluster of players within the first three rounds and then the path really diverges depending upon which direction you want to go with your team. That being said, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the ADP mocks.
Let's do it.
The heat of summer is here. Whether you're going for a long run or just sitting by the pool, your favorite summer treat could be giving you extraordinary hydration. Liquid IV has refreshing summer flavors like Popsicle Firecracker and Rainbow Sherbet that hit the spot when you need transformative, hydrating relief all summer long. Indulge in hydration with electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients from the number one powdered hydration brand in America, Liquid IV. Did you know that blue and pink cotton candy are different flavors? I didn't until I started enjoying both of them through Liquid IV. Personally, I'm partial to the blue cotton candy. I make sure I pour some in my water bottle with some ice before I head out on a bike ride. It not only hydrates, but it's a more enjoyable way to stay hydrated. Blue cotton candy, that's my recommendation. But I've yet to find a Liquid IV flavor I don't like. Cool off your summer with the reimagined flavors of treats like Rainbow Sherbet and Popsicle Firecracker. Or make your own Liquid IV popsicles. Indulgent flavors keep your wellness rituals fresh and keep you motivated and hydrated. Find all your favorite flavors on the website. There's acai berry, lemon lime, pina colada. You can even choose from their line of sugar-free flavors like raspberry melon, white peach, and green grape. The white peach, that's pretty good too. Tear, pour, live more. One stick and 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. It's powdered by Live Hydroscience, an optimized ratio of electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients that turn ordinary water into extraordinary hydration. Three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, eight essential vitamins and nutrients. Always non-GMO, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. Indulge in hydration this summer with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code BA2022 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code BA2022 at liquidiv.com.
AI might be the most important innovation ever. It's storming every industry with literally billions being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs the right data and a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? Time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, and application development with AI embedded across it all. And Oracle Sovereign Cloud helps you address your requirements for location, access, and data residency. OCI provides blazing fast speeds for AI's demanding workloads. And in the cloud, when you pay by the minute, speed matters. And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. If you want OCI to help you do more and spend less, like Uber, the Premier League, and Oracle Red Bull Racing, take a free test drive at oracle.com/bandwidth. That's oracle.com/bandwidth. oracle.com/bandwidth.
All right, and we are back. Round four, it's funny because this player, I think, went in the sixth round in yours. I went with Christian Campbell in the fourth. Like, I don't know how you can debate it at this point. He's in double A, first full season in pro ball. He's added the bat speed. The impact's been there. The contact has only gotten better throughout the year. It hasn't ticked down at all. Huge exit velocities. He's athletic. He can play a couple of different positions. could be up with a big league club, probably not late this year, but I think early next year, there's even a shot that he could break camp with the team. Second base is still a bit of a concern for the Red Sox long term. So I think that Christian Campbell, especially when Nick York getting moved out for Quinn Priester, that kind of showed their hand a little bit, how much they believe in Campbell. So I think this is like at a point where there's a lot of players that could have gone in that direction with. I went that way. You went Luke Kuechel, another guy that's super performing, multi-position guy, could be up with a big league club next year. There's a lot of similarities there. What did you like about Kuechel that you wanted to take him there?
Yeah, so in these drafts, even though they're mocks and stuff, it's still embedded in me that I'm trying to optimize. And so looking at how the first three rounds have kind of unfolded, I kind of got a sense of like which guys were picking off of which lists and stuff. And so I was trying to be able to get Christian Campbell in the seventh because I thought that I'd be able to get him, and that didn't work out. So in that case, I thought I wanted to go Kuechel in the fourth and then my five and six pick and then get Campbell in the seventh. And so I thought I could get both, or else I probably would have taken Campbell in the fourth, because everything you said, I completely agree with. And you mentioned the defense, but if looking at the defensive metrics, like he's a 70 defender based on like run prevention above average. So I think it's kind of unsung, his defense too. So, I mean, you have the huge power, all the underlying stuff we're talking about looks great, and the defense too. So like, that's my type of guy. So anyway, Kuechel, it became a question of like which RoboScout guy, because I wanted to draft primarily off RoboScout, add in defense, add in, you know, my tweaks of, you know, what I know, what I see under the data, etc. And I like Kuechel because power, speed, hit tool, all the underlying, he does well against all pitch types, like all the Statcast looks great. And he just seemed just like a solid pick. And I kind of felt it got thin. I wasn't really in love with any of the available prospects. The ones I really like, I would be taking way too early because I know I could get them later, even though I think they kind of belong here. But at this level, kind of the fourth and fifth, I was kind of feeling like it's like pick who you want to pick, because it got really thin. And I don't know how you felt about, I mean, I think the consensus in general is like the top 100 is kind of light right now, especially maybe in fantasy compared to real life. Yeah. And I really felt that here in the fourth and fifth.
So it's light in real life too. It's light in real life too.
So I was like, you know, someone that like it's very defensible on the results. It's very defensible based on real life lists. It's very defensible based on RoboScout. Like the results are there, the underlying's there. I wanted power, speed. I had Mayo and Condon, so that's like big time power. So, you know, I could get kind of like a hit-ish tool guy with power and a little bit of speed. And so I just went with Luke Kuechel, kind of like a safer floor guy, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think just a good all-around player too. Like there's a lot of ways that he can impact a fantasy team. I don't have a huge concern that he's not going to hit, you know, once he does get up to the big league level. You know, I think that's not as much of a concern for me. You had Quinn Matthews in the fifth. I think that was a auto draft boo-boo by Fantrax. I think there were a few of them. Some of the check marks, some of the stuff that was going on for some reason, the queue wasn't working the way it typically was. I was lucky enough to catch a couple and back them out. But I mean, Matthews, honestly, there isn't a bad pickup. But he was the only pitcher that you took. The funny thing is, I took Nick Kurtz in the fifth. You got Kurtz in the eighth. I'm surprised that he lasted that long, especially considering like Drew Jones went before him. Thomas Sejacy went before him. Connor Norby went before him. Davison De Los Santos went before him. James Triantos. These are fine prospects. Ethan Salas, Braden Taylor's a fine, George Lombard. These are fine prospects. I think people need to be reminded Kurtz is way better than you think he is. I know he's in Oakland. They've got some big league players that are hitting right now, as far as I know. Like, they figured out Rooker. They figured out J.J. Bleda. Jacob Wilson, pretty good player. Kurtz is a more athletic guy than Jack Caglianone. I'm going to make this point until I'm blue in the face. He runs better. He's a better jumper. He can play the outfield. Cags can't really play the outfield. The hit tool was better than Cags, and he has similar power. We pulled up the numbers a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about some of these FYPD guys. This is what people wanted Nolan Chanuel to be. This is like elite approach. We said the chase rate, it's like in the single digits last year at Wake Forest. He's in a big boy conference playing big boy teams every week. Big power. The biggest concern with him has been health. And honestly, like, some of it was just weird stuff. Like, it wasn't, you know, debilitating back injuries or anything like that, where I think it's going to be a concern long term. I'm shocked he lasted as long as he did in yours. And even some of the FYPD guys that were going in front of him, I was happy to take him there. I kind of built up my queue, and really, like, my next like 6 or 7 rounds were almost my queue in order. Like, I was shocked as the pitchers were flying off the board. I was shocked at like some of these mid rotation number 4 types that were going. But I just think it shows that the market has really shifted in the prospect space a little bit toward pitching. Maybe it's the Paul Skeens effect a little bit. Cause it's not like there's been a ton of prospect pitchers that have come up and really set the world on fire. There's been spurts. They've been good, but a lot of them have just been rookie pitchers where, you know, even like River Ryan, it looks good. There's other times it's a little messy. It's a little whippy, you know? That's more like long-term, you know, there's not many guys that are coming up and having immediate impacts. And I think like some of these bats definitely could. And they're also players that I think the ups and downs of, you know, the slog of making it to the majors, to the minor leagues aren't as drastic. I mean, we saw with Ricky Tiedemann going into 2023, this was a top 3 pitching prospect in baseball, and it was justified, you know. Had a really good AFL. I think it put some of the injury concerns aside. He's really not been right for the better part of 2 years now. That shows like how up and down it really is. So really, like, I would have been fine investing in pitching later. I took one pitcher later. We'll talk about that. It's an FYPD arm. I was happy to get Kurtz. My next couple of picks, 6 and 7. Jason Churio is a good all-around player. I think he'll develop more power. Good skills. Can run. Good, you know, defensive value. Bryce Rainier, shortstop the Tigers took in the first round, I think at pick 11. I think you can argue he's a better prospect, particularly for fantasy, than Connor Griffin, because there's more actualized hit tool. And we talked about this in the FYPD show a couple of weeks ago, but also like competed in one of the best conferences in the country, as opposed to playing high school baseball in Mississippi. So there is a pretty stark difference between those two. Your sixth was Moises Ballesteros. Frank and Arias, both players we like a lot. Talk to me about those guys.
Yeah, so I wanted Ballesteros and Arias. You talking about the queue and then they're coming available. I wanted Ballesteros and Arias in 5 and 6. I got autoed on Quinn Matthews. I left it because I think he's a pretty good value there anyway. So it just didn't go exactly the way I went, and I ended up getting Arias anyway. I think just speaking to your pitcher thing, like, Spencer Schwellenbach had that 11 strikeout game. He's been on fire. I think you said, like you said, the Skeens effect. I think with Skeens and Jared Jones, Bubba Chandler is now looked at like as the next big thing, or Thomas Harrington for Pittsburgh, and Bubba Chandler in the third and in my mock as well. So I think there is some sort of a pitching wave, like a swell of goodwill towards pitching in these mocks for sure. I wonder if it is, you know, like the Skeens effect, like you said, and just your observations you've been making all season about fantasy. So yeah, I like Ballesteros. He's a Robusco favorite. I don't like taking catchers in these things, but he's kind of undeniable. Just like good hit tool, good power. Probably not going to stick at catcher, but like just I have him like a 30 home run bat with a above average batting average and on base. So 25 to 30 home runs. He's in AAA. He hit a home run in like his first week, or hit 2 home runs or something like that. So I think he's kind of a very high floor. Even though he doesn't have the greatest body, I think he's going to be good. Franklin Arias, we talked about at length last week. I think he's probably the hottest prospect on Twitter right now. Just RoboScout sees him as like a 2020 guy. He's young for the level. He plays good defense. He's like a 60 defense. He's been playing primarily short. He may not stick there, but you know, so far in the minors, the defensive metrics look good for him. So I really like him there. And then I remember I texted you because I had the Kurtz pick coming up, and I'm like, what do you think, Kurtz, Rainier, or Arjun Amala? I kind of wanted to make a splash with Amala because he's pretty hot in the minors right now in terms of hitting home runs per week. And then you said Kurtz, no question. And I'd already taken him because you took longer than 15 minutes to get back to me, Jeff.
Sorry. Was that my kids?
So I'm glad we're on the same page there. And so I got him in the eighth, and I was very happy with that.
Yeah. I thought that was a good pick. I actually ended up with, we have a lot of similar picks at different spots. I grabbed Franklin Arias in the ninth round. Was able to get, I like Angel Janao. I'm going to see him actually next week mm-hmm. when I'm out in the Cleveland area. He's super interesting. You know, switch hitter, there's good contact there. I think there's some projectability. So that was one where it was like, we're starting to get like near 100. I'm totally fine taking more up the middle guys. You also took Michael Arroyo. You took Michael Arroyo in the 10th. I got Michael Arroyo in the 12th. That was one where I had taken a couple of Dodgers prospects in Edward Quintero and Zaire Hope in the 10th and the 11th. And then like Arroyo was there. It was like easy. Took Arroyo. And then I took another player that you took in the 15th. I took him in the 13th. So it's just funny how like we're kind of flip-flopping on our boards. Alex Freeland, you got him in the 15th. I got him in the 13th. I was a little shocked that he had lasted that long, frankly. He's been so good all season long. I know that the numbers ticked down a little bit, but it's the Dodgers. I think this is a guy that can play, you know, multiple positions in the infield. He can hit. I don't know if he's in the mix there long-term, if he's in the mix there next year. I think he'll be in the mix somewhere for somebody over the next 12 months. So was happy to grab that one. You had a couple of guys here where I thought about it. You took Jesus Mate from the Brewers. Pretty good one there. My kind of special grab from RoboScout was Eduardo Beltre in the 15th. We talked about Beltre a ton last week. I've seen the helium on him go up significantly. Mm-hmm. I got outbid in my 30-team league on him, Dylan. $50. He went for 25% of the $200 budget.
Wow.
Because this time of year, man, you gotta spend that money if you're not in contention and you got a guy that's available like that. So figured that was potentially the case of something that would happen. I like this power grab that you got right here, though. Joined Kenzie Noel in the 11th, Ryan Clifford in the 12th, and then Carter Jensen in the 14th. You got some major EVs there, some big home run power. I saw people kind of leaning in on first base types and power types within the first five or six rounds. And, you know, I like grabbing some of those guys. I don't want to be too redundant. I'm kind of go for guys that have tools, some speed, all around ability. And one of the reasons is you can get some of these mashers like this that might be equal to guys up the board in 2 or 3 years at, you know, round 11, pick 10, round 12, pick 3. Really interesting picks there.
Yeah. So like when I took Jesus Mate, it's like, I'm kind of outside the top 100 now. And so I'm like,
yeah.
I think it's completely defensible to take Jesus Mate at 100. Arroyo, like you said, I grabbed. And then Jonkensi Noel, he's in the majors. He's playing quite a bit. He was playing full-time when Josh Naylor was injured. But he's playing quite a bit. And, you know, he's got 30 home run power. So I'm a guy who's already in the majors and playing. I think you got to take him. It's kind of like a Joey Loperfido. Like he belongs here if we're playing for real here. So I had to take him, even though it's not, you know, a sexy pick to take someone who's in the majors already. And then Ryan Clifford, I've been writing about him and, in RoboScout just because he's been so hot lately. He's got like 10 home runs in the last month or so. He's just crushing it compared to everyone else at the level, in the past 6 weeks or so. And it's just like, he may be a three true outcomes guy, but just the power right now just looks so huge. So I had to take him. When I took Carter Jensen in the 14th, I actually kind of wanted to take Eduardo Tait. But then Jensen, he got promoted to Double A and he hit a home run, like two home runs in his first seven games or so. So I'm like, I guess I better take Carter Jensen then because he is closer to the majors. He does have a better RoboScout projection. And I think, you know, for the next 5 years, he's probably the better pick than Tait. But I just love Eduardo Tait. Tait is sort of my guy. He's becoming my guy now. But of course, Chris Clegg took him in the 15th. So I got stuck with Alex Freeland, like you said.
There you go.
Yeah. I guess when the 15th round, it was just like I had so many options. I didn't know who to take. And I'm like, well, I guess I'll go with Alex Freeland because it's extremely, extremely defensible. There's no real downside to taking him there 15th round in a 12 team league. So, but there were so many options there. There was an embarrassment of riches. I kind of wanted the draft to go another five rounds.
And I also think it's like the snapshot in time when these mocks are done aren't any more reflective of the future than if these were done 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I think that Alex Freeland probably goes a little bit higher, you know, if these mocks are done 2 months ago. It's still a 126 WRC plus over his first 74 games in AA as a 22-year-old who can play a bunch of different positions, who's a switch hitter. There's going to be some growing pains there as well. I thought it was a great pick. And I'll mention my last pick I haven't talked about yet. I took one pitcher in the 14th, and that is Ryan Sloan. Yes. I'm planting my flag. I am going to be drafting Ryan Sloan all over the place. I love the Mariners pitching development. I think this guy has some of the highest upside in the draft, regardless of ending up with Seattle. The fit there is just like hand in glove. It is perfect. So that's a name that, you know, if you're in the middle of FYPDs right now or getting into them in the next couple of weeks, all mine are in the offseason. I like later FYPDs. I want the FYPDs that include all the international guys as well, because it just swells up the potential board and all the options that you have, especially in deeper leagues. But Sloan is a guy that, you know, I'll take at the back, you know, pick 18 to 30 all day long. So that's one that I like a lot. I think there's a ton of upside. You know, we'll see how he gets rolled out next year. But if there's any organization at this point that I'd want with a high-end high school pitching prospect, it's that one. And especially with the abilities this guy has, cold weather prospect, you know, it's popping 97, easy mid 90s. I had one scout say, and this is a direct quote that came from my good friend Matt Pajak, but it was Ryan Sloan could throw a marshmallow through a battleship. So just put that into perspective, marshmallow through a battleship. So it's he throws that hard. It's legit stuff. So he's a guy that I'm all over. I was happy to grab him there. Kind of had him floating around and just kept moving him down as I was seeing some of the other players that were going. I'm like, I'm going to be able to sit on Sloan until one of my last couple of picks. And so, you know, grabbed him, and then I grabbed my sweet baby Eduardo Beltre. So, that's a Robo Scout pick and a Jeff Scout pick. So kind of mixed it up a little bit. We had a lot of commonality. I think we had one, two, three, four players that were common drafting out of very different points of the draft. So that's about as many crossover picks as we probably would have had unless we picked in the same exact spot in the same exact room. So there you go. But I hope this was helpful. Dylan still needs to get some food in his belly. I'm going to let him do that. Thank you all for tuning in. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. I'm Jeff. He's Dylan. See you next week.
Cheers.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center. All powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.